This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey guys, welcome to Steel Wars. I am comedian Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars. Please enjoy this classic clip, which is available in full at patreon.com/Steel Wars. In the timeline, we just jump through from Red Jedi to Phantom Menace.
Yes.
But in the middle of that, there was another little Star Wars film that went for about 10 minutes.
Oh, that one. Okay. Trying to think which... What the Ewok adventure?
Troops, which yeah. I hope everyone listening has seen it. It is a Star Wars parody of the Cops TV series. And I remember almost like seeing it back... I don't know if it was the late 90s when I saw it or the early 2000s, but... The first time I saw it, and I think it was at a convention in Australia, but it was just like seeing like this, like it was because of the internet wasn't as developed. It was just like seeing this amazing secret tape.
Yeah.
And it was just such a privilege and such a, like a forbidden thrill to see this fan film, because we weren't used to fan films.
Yeah.
Like the fact that some guys went out to the desert to make this funny sketch or film, like it blew my mind. Tell us how the genesis of the idea for the film came along. And is that my coffee?
That is your coffee. Okay, there's sugar there. Didn't bring you cream.
That's right.
But the genesis of it goes back quite a ways, and it takes a few turns. It started with my friends Mark Altman, Robert Meyer Burnett, Steve Milching, and David Hardgrove. A lot of these, my friends I hung out with, we were all sci-fi fans, and Mark had a sci-fi magazine called Sci-Fi Universe, and the publication has since ceased.
Every magazine ever mentioned on this podcast,
yeah,
has since ceased.
But Steve Milching, who is now the head writer on Rebels, was talking with Mark about doing a comic book strip in Sci-Fi Universe that would parody the Dark Horse comic book Tales of a Bounty Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
And the title was going to be Tales of a Death Star Scanning Crew. And the story was simply going to follow these stormtroopers as they got up in the morning, took a shower, shaved, got dressed, ate their breakfast, walked down to the Millennium Falcon, and got blown up. And it never came to pass. And we had joked about it, and because a lot of us worked in the industry, still work in the industry, but at that time, some of us were working for Fox, myself included, we got advanced screenings to The Phantom Menace. Advanced screenings to Star Wars Special Edition.
I have to engage the audience's curiosity. What were you doing at Fox?
My very first professional job at Fox was as a character designer and animator. My final thesis film at Long Beach State University was an animated project. One of my friends showed that to an executive at Fox, and that got me a job working for Fox Kids. Steve Milching also got a job working on X-Men. That was one of his first shows there.
Uh-huh.
So we were all coming out of the advanced screening of the special edition of Star Wars from the Daryl Zanuck Theater, and the Tales of the Bounty Hunter comic strip once again came up. And as we were all walking to our cars on the lot, we started talking, and I do not remember who it was, but somebody threw out the line, you know, it would be hilarious, again, because we worked for Fox and Cops was a Fox TV show. They said, it would be funny if you crossed Cops with Star Wars. And everybody busted up. And then there was silence. And I said, is anyone going to take that? And everybody said, no. I said, well, does anybody mind if I run with that? And I didn't know what I was going to do. I'm sure they had no idea. But rather than going to my car, I went back to my office. And I across the hall was the video library where all of our shows are housed. And I went into the library and I pulled out 5 episodes of Cops. And I watched those. And then I spent the rest of the night crafting the script.
That night,
yeah. No, I just said, I got to write this.
That's incredible. I just to go off on a tangent, as someone that does, like, you know, works in the digital realm and does effects, is that the right?
I work with in digital effects, but I am not by any means a digital effects artist.
Mm-hmm.
My job here at Synaptic is semi-officially titled Director of Special Projects.
Mm-hmm.
And what I do is I craft presentations for shows that we are bidding or shows that we have developed in-house and take out. So I will put together what is called a pitch package that tells you about the show, and then I will also put together a video presentation.
Okay, so what were you doing at Fox? Sorry,
I was animating. I was a character designer.
In what sort of animation?
Children's television.
So, but what sort of animation? Like
2D.
2D, like cartoons, sort of.
Yes, cartoons.
Okay, cool. So as someone, I'll rephrase the question. As
sure.
someone that was, you know, in animation mm-hmm. at the time.
Yes.
How did you find the special edition effects and Jabba? Like, you know, it's sort of, to look back now, you know, some of it looks weird, but I saw the end of The Mummy the other night. It was on a TV in a restaurant, and it was just like it reeked of, like, the new millennium sort of thing. How, walking out, someone that was in the industry, how did you find the animation?
The animation itself, again, you have to take it in its time and place. We had nothing to compare it against at that time. Again, this was new.
Yeah.
And so, and also, I'm old enough to have seen a progression of effects that go from Harryhausen stop motion animation all the way up to today, where the effects are virtually invisible. And so I allow a certain amount of suspension of disbelief and leeway when it comes to new technologies. And if the story is engaging enough, the effects, no matter their quality, should not tear you away or take you out of the piece. That having been said, I found that the Jabba inclusion, while it was nice to see it, it was jarring, forgivable, but jarring. And for me, I think the overall experience of once again seeing Star Wars on the big screen at the 20th Century Fox lot inside the Daryl Zanuck Theater with my friends more than compensated. You know, it was a wonderful experience, and it was great to see it up on the big screen, and it was once again great to step into man's Chinese theater and watch it, you know, in that hallowed screening room.
Yeah, well, being from Australia, I had very limited chances to go see a Star Wars film at Mann's, but towards the end of the Force Awakens run,
yes.
Last year I was here, and
oh,
I was
good.
Like, I have to hit up Mann's for a
Did
bit of
like
Force
it?
Awakens. Oh, yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
It was great. I feel like the theater has developed a little bit since they showed Star Wars.
You know, they the TCL, which is now the company that owns Mann's Chinese Theater, recently underdid a complete restoration of that theater. They lowered the floor to allow for rake seating. I believe they kept the exact same amount of seats. And it's almost as though you are seeing it in the exact same venue The sound is obviously much better. Mm. The seating arrangements are great, and the picture quality is again outstanding.
Yeah.
Whereas it used to be an echo chamber, but very very little has changed about Mann's as far as its look or the experience you get stepping into that theater.
Mm.
And if you want to see what Mann's looked like prior to its present incarnation, you can pick from a bevy of films. The Aviator, Singing in the Rain.
Because I remember back when The Special Edition came out, like I used to watch back in Australia Entertainment Tonight every day because they'd have little clips and they'd show the
back when they actually covered entertainment.
Yeah, it was amazing. And just seeing, like, I just remember seeing, like, the wireframed, like, Jubak and Jabra, and it was, yeah, like, back then it was just like, this is incredible. Like, it just seemed like that they were building a digital Jabra. Like, back then it was,
sure,
mind-blowing. But and I think there was also, apart from that, we forgave a lot because it was new Star Wars stuff. Like, just to see that that scene,
yeah,
finally, it was just like...
And again, you have to keep in mind what the zeitgeist was. We didn't think we were going to get any new Star Wars. Mm. This was 1997. The announcement for Episode 1 was still a year away.
Yeah. Well, the end of Return of the Jedi, I would have been, I don't know, like 4 or something. But I remember going to see it. Mm-hmm. But I also remember it being the first time... It's the first time I can remember disappointment or, like, that was the last one.
Oh.
Like, I remember walking out and I was so happy that my heroes won and the Ewoks were partying. But I actually remember walking out into the car park and going, well, that's it for that. Mm-hmm. Like, it was my first sort of... I don't know, like doom thought or something.
The first time the world crushed your soul.
And it was the same feeling when I drove out of the car park for Revenge of the Sith. I'm like, well, that's it. That's it for that.
Yeah.
No more of that. Loved it. It's done. There's nothing left for me on this planet.
No. What are you going to do after Episode 9?
I'm going to wait for Episode 10, will probably be in 6 months' time after that. I think I'm set. I think it's more... My biggest worry now is timing my death with a release of a film. That's my new concern, which is not so bad. So, you went back to work.
Yes.
And you wrote the script,
mm-hmm,
all that night. I'm wondering, was it... Like, in my mind, it seems like a revolutionary idea to make this fan film. Was there any sort of fan films from other genres that you were taking inspiration from, or
no? Basically, the climate of Los Angeles and Hollywood at that time, you know, everybody's always looking for what's the next trend, what's the new thing, what's hot. When I was in high school, the way to break into the industry was to go to a film school like USC or NYU. Or UCLA, and so that became my goal. It says, well, I'm going to a film school, and I got into a film school. And when I got into a film school, then the trend was independent filmmakers and Sundance and doing your own independent film, like Kevin Smith or Robert Rodriguez or Quentin Tarantino. And so then you had the paradigm shift, and every kid coming out of film school is now trying to get into Sundance. And I made an independent film with my friends in 1995, which did not go on to any great success, but we did it. And right around that time, 96, late 96, early 97, the trend then became gray market videos. These were little things that were floating around Hollywood that people had produced. Leading that charge was Trey Parker and Matt Stone with their first South Park.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, their second South Park video that had been copied by George Clooney and had gotten around Hollywood because he had made like 300 copies. And so everybody was into, you know, getting this little item that nobody could get.
George Clooney, the original Pirate Bay.
Yes. And so that's where the climate was when I was thinking about Troops, was we saw South Park. Obviously, we were in the industry. We had access to this little tape of animated kids with foul mouths. And I'm sure, as has happened with a lot of people, they'll look at something and say, well, I can do that. And that was the case. It was like, well, I could do something like that. I can make a video and try to get it around town. And that was where my thinking was. I have limitations, as anybody does when they're doing a film, and mine was budget for an effects piece. And it's like, well, how do you get around those? And I simply looked. I said, well, where do I live and what do I have access to? I don't have money to build sets, so it has to be location. I can't do a big Hollywood setup. So it has to be documentary style. So that dictated the format and said, well, okay, cops.
And you do live up the road from Tatooine.
Yeah. And yeah, it's so that was the thing. I said, I'm near a desert. I've got hundreds and hundreds of miles of desert all around me. I can do Tatooine. And then now that we have set the location because of my budget constraints and it's Tatooine, what stories can I tell that are true to both Star Wars and to the format that I'm now parodying, which is cops? And it would, the most common stories I saw in those five tapes of watching cops was Grand Theft Auto and spousal abuse. And so I simply applied those two to the Star Wars universe. And that's how I developed that script. And because at that point, I had been working in the industry professionally for 7 years. I had developed a lot of connections and friendships, and I knew little people from the time that I had worked at Universal Studios. They were characters that walked around the park, and I said I have two little people that can play Jawas. I have many friends in the special effects industry. My best friend is a special effects artist who, at the time, Sean Jordan, was the supervisor of special effects on Babylon 5.
Oh, wow.
So we did all of these, you know, at home in our spare time, but everybody, to a man working on that, was an industry professional. And so it was kind of a misnomer that it was a bunch of amateurs. It was actually a bunch of professionals making an amateur film.
Yeah. To hear the full episode along with hundreds of hours of bonus content, I would invite you to check out the Steel Wars Patreon page at patreon.com/Steel Wars. For just $3 a month, you get a dedicated RSS feed that easily pastes into any podcast app you use, sending the complete archives of Steel Wars episodes along with bonus Patreon exclusives like movie commentaries, Q&As, and shows like the Making Steel Wars show, which I make exclusively for Patreon members with Jason Ward of MakingStarWars.net, where we try to find the news behind the news. Plus, you'll get the bonus segments from the call-in shows, which sometimes can be over an hour. And as well as all the bonus content, you get that warm glow that you are supporting this show you listen to each week. The idea behind Patreon is if lots of people chip in a little bit of cash, that content producers such as myself can still keep producing for you guys while still being able to feed our very cute Ewok-looking cats. There's a hungry cat involved in this, guys, as well as some sweet, sweet content. Check out all the super fun tiers and all the shows you're missing out on at patreon.com/Steel Wars. And may that force be with you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.